أنا أعضاء الرعيون.
No one can rival you, dear.
Only my way of speaking.
Yes.
I couldn't care less. I'm only too happy that you got some ears occasionally that comes and gives you some information and can talk well.
He's very much like you.
In what way do you mean?
Well, he's not very reticent about speaking.
Oh, so you're not so good at coming to speak to someone if you're not going to open your mouth and talk. Very good evidence, and that was very like his sort of way, but it was love him, not in the sense of
recognizing
his personality.
Yes. Oh, that's a very good explanation, and that will be very useful for me when people come and ask the reason of so. So that's why I deliberately asked you. Thank you.
I think it's very important that people should realize in your world that owing to the many complications and difficulties of communication, and that thought in itself is a predominant thing that matters, it is thought that is transmitted to you artificially, that in the transmission of thought, there may be discrepancies, there may be things which don't quite fit in with your way of thinking or your way of accepting. I mean, for instance, you may have a strong preconceived idea about the person, and it may be through experience that you have that strong preconceived knowledge and a firm idea. I mean, for instance, if you've known someone perhaps for 40 or 50 years or that, and you know their personality, and you know the way of their speech, and the little idiosyncrasies and what have you that help to contribute towards that particular person as you knew them well enough, naturally, if someone comes and gives you a message, no matter if the context is excellent, if the voice and the personality doesn't match up, you say, well, I don't know whether it was really that person or whether it was someone impersonating that person. And that's where you get this bugbear in your world amongst students and people that accept, and you are puzzled, because they wonder how much is 100%, how much is really that person, and how much is impersonation.
Yes.
You see, a lot of things have to be looked into, a lot of things have to be accepted and understood, and you have to realize that there's no such thing fundamentally or really, or very rare, that you can expect to get 100% communication. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's rare and it's difficult. Only a person with a very great knowledge of communication and a very strong personality at that can hope to get through a great deal of themselves or what they want to see or could be. That's why they get difficulties. For instance, times, for instance, when perhaps I have been speaking to you, and because I'm pretty good at it now, I've got so focused or so sort of assured in myself about it that I can do it quite well. But there are times when perhaps if I've been speaking perhaps 20 minutes or so of your time, that I feel the weakening there. I feel that I'm not holding on as strong as I was at first, which is not being stated.
Yes.
When someone else
comes in
and takes over gradually, sometimes it's so subtle that probably you have the...
Oh, yes, I have experience.
You see, this merging, if you like, this merging of communication or this merging of personality which happens at seances and so on is all very understandable, because you have to realize that the whisper or the instrument, if you like, that we use is on a certain wavelength of vibration, and that person has been attuned over years of development, no doubt, to become an instrument on a certain wavelength of vibration, and in consequence we have to tune in, and we have to be in harmony with that person. That's why harmony is another very important thing in sales. If you have a group of people that are in perfect harmony and that are used to sitting for a long period of time together, they know each other and understand each other and trust each other and have a great affection. In other words, if you've got a perfect combination of condition, then it makes our task much easier, because we've got not only the power which is derived from the various sitters as power in a physical sense, but we have the mental harmony too, and we have the cooperative spirit, and we have a great deal there that we can work upon and use, and in consequence we can often hold on for quite a long time, much more so than in a promiscuous group of people that are gathered together, each one having their own strong personality, and each one having their own desires, and wanting this and wanting that, and each one is pulling, as it were, for themselves, and have no interest in the other people present. In other words, they have quite perhaps unconsciously, but a selfish motive.
Right.
And that's where I think mediumship feels a strain. You see, a medium is a highly sensitized individual, not necessarily only from the point of view of personality and temperament, but also from the psychic sense, that they have this quality which has been developed, which over a period of time has become so sensitized that under certain conditions they can be used as instruments in a very highly successful manner. But the whole point is that if, like all sensitive things, all sensitive instruments, even in a mechanical and technical sense on your side, if they are abused or if they are used without knowledge, if they are ham-fisted, as it were, by people, In other words, if someone doesn't know how to take care of a delicate piece of machinery and see that it's run in the proper manner and that it's cared for, then gradually it'll break down. And that's where the problem of all professional mediums is, I think, that although it is their job to spread truth, and that's a job that we have, of course, at the same time, they must be used in the right way. They must be careful, and they must be nurtured, and they must not be allowed to listen to that. I mean, I'm not suggesting that anyone has the right to try and control another person as to their thoughts and their actions. A person must be allowed to develop their own personality and character, and they must be given free will. But the point is, there must be the cooperative spirit with the medium, and realize his responsibilities to others and to the work that he has to do. It's a tremendous undertaking, and I realize that there are very few people that really can fulfill the demand that's placed upon them. And when a person has developed and been developed after a great deal of effort by outside, then they have a right, not only a right, of course, to their own personal life, but they have an obligation. They have an obligation to fulfill to themselves and to the people that they help and work for, and of course to those who've done so much for them from the side. You see, if you've got the right kind of mentality, if you have a medium who's prepared to give his life in service to humanity and prepared to cooperate in every possible way, then we have a channel, and the higher that thought, the more, as it were, they think on the lines of spiritual things and put the true values on things that matter, then we have got an instrument that we can really work with and through and do great things. And we have so much hope here. I mean, I know that there's been disappointments and there's been setbacks and all the rest of it. But I'm not blaming anyone for that, because I'd be the last person. Because I know that one must be human, and one must to some extent within a material world consider material things. You can live in your world and be on this side at the same time, or be the sort of person you may even like to be, or would want to be, because sometimes it's not quite possible. But the point is that when there is complete cooperation, as far as it's humanly possible, there are no limits to what can be achieved. I mean, I've heard what I promised here, I've heard the things that were said, and I have no doubt in my mind that there's no limits that could be reached if only there is this continuation of love and harmony and cooperative spirit and the realization of what can be done by the power of spirit. Because there's no limit, really, when there is complete harmony and complete cooperation between our world and yours. It's all that we ask, no more, no less.
Oh yes, we all realize that. Not that we don't.
I know from all experiences I've been coming here that the people that come are really quite, although they probably are annoyed if they heard me say, they're quite wonderful people. They really are extremely fine people with high motives. And they have got so much that they want to achieve and so much that they want to bring through. You know, when I first came here, I was vastly different to where I am now. I've learned a great deal by coming here and listening and getting to know these people and beginning to appreciate gradually what they're trying to do and what they're aiming for. I realize that they're really so unselfish, and they give up so much to come down to earth and to do this work and to give all that they can give in helping not only you but whoever comes here, whether it's in a normal way, apart from the ordinary group that you're saying and the ordinary sentences, but the people that come here. I've been here many a time when people have come and they've been in great sorrow and they've been in great need, and the way that I've worked from this side to help those people, to bring their dear ones through and help to comfort them, help to give them a new way of life, it's been a great revelation to me, because really they give up so much. I don't think anyone realizes quite what. They've been the last to tell you that. It's true that the time they spend on earth is insignificant in time itself. That's all very true. They often see that. And I would not be right to deny that, but it seems to me that it's not an easy thing. I know from all experience, it's not an easy thing. When you have seen and experienced and you've lived in a world which is so far removed in so many different ways from earth, where everything is so much finer, so much nobler, and so much more lovely to enter into the old earth ways of thought and living. As we do, in a sense, for a time when we come here, it's no easy.
I know. You have changed a great deal, David.
I took them now that I had, and I still have got a sense of humour.
Yes, yes, yes.
But the point is that I realised that I never used to think very deeply. It was not that I was on the surface exactly, because I do think by my nature that I was ever unkind, not really unkind, or that I thought badly of other people. I, as a matter of fact, I was probably rather simple-minded, but at the same time, I rather did the way I wanted to live, and I had no thought of the moral. I was pretty easygoing, but now I think much more deeply, and I realise that life is a serious business, and not something that you can just flit through from day to day. And I don't mean only life on your side, but life on this. Life is an experience that is a precious gift.
It is an extension of this one.
And there's so much to assimilate, and so much to learn, and so much to know about, and so much to experience in so many different ways. And I realise now, more than I ever did, that it is of many of the difficult things that are most important. Not the things that are simple and easy, not the happier moments perhaps when everything goes well. Those things are natural that we like the most. It's only human that it is the reversals of fortune. Disappointments in life and the realization that comes that from sorrow and suffering you do learn. You learn much more than you can ever learn through having your own way and getting everything you want. Because even those things, important though they are at the time, fall very quickly, because you find that after all you didn't want this or you didn't want that as bad as you thought you did, and it didn't turn out quite as you expected it might have done. In fact, there's so many disappointments in the things that one thinks one wants and loves and likes and so on, that I find that in the reversals of fortune, in the sadness and the setbacks, we become kinder, we become more human, more understanding, more tolerant, more patient. In fact, we learn all the good qualities through, strangely enough, the bad events.
And that's quite true. It's through bad that you learn.
Yeah, that's an old saying, how evil cometh good. And we don't really know what evil is. And evil has sometimes been misinterpreted.
Yes, I think.
We're inclined to put the word evil to all sorts of things that are against what we want, are against what we think. Of course, we know there are some things that are downright evil from the point of view of being wicked and wrong. But at the same time, many of the things that we look down upon and we are distressed about, the things that we try to avoid if we can, strangely enough, they're the things that teach us most. I remember quite a bit.
Oh, good, David. I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, I look quite the same person.
Are you content, Philip? Are you content now where you are?
Well, I suppose in a kind of way that you ask content.
Yes.
Contentment's a strange word to use. At one time, probably when on earth, I would have thought of contentment as being able to do what I wanted when I felt inclined, and being able to afford to do it, and all that sort of thing. But that's not really contentment. That's actually the reverse, in a sense. What I think is that I am contented. At the same time, I realise there's so much more yet to experience and learn that I'm anxious to know, I'm anxious to find out. So in a kind of strange way, I suppose, I'm contented and discontented.
Yes, that's right. That's the way to...
You know, it's rather like living in a very nice house.
Yes.
And you love it very much, and it gives you great joy and happiness. You seem to have everything that you want. But there's several doors that are locked up, and you haven't got the key.
Yes.
And you think, oh, I wonder what's around there, what's behind that door, I wish I could get a key for that door. And you don't realise that you cannot go through that door, you cannot open that door until you've made it possible to have the key to do that.
Yes, that's true.
I think life is like that you sometimes seem to have everything. At the same time, there's some things that you haven't got, because you don't see them, you're not conscious of them.
Yes.
It's only when your eyes are gradually open, you realise that there are things there all the time that you never realised existed. You do not open your eyes until you yourself have made it worthwhile and possible. In other words, you have within yourself the key to open all the doors. And that is sincerity of purpose, the realisation that you are part of a great plan, and that you cannot live to self alone, that you must share that which you have with others, and you must realise that whatever you may have is not really yours, it's only lent to you for the time, and that from it you can gain experience, but whatever experience you have, it can never fully satisfy you, because the simple reason there are always other things that you know somewhere exist, and you've got to find the way. In other words, it's an eternal struggle within oneself for expression, a struggle for realization, and the way to find the path. And when you find that path, you trudge that path, and sometimes though you know you're on the right path, you feel you must rest a while, you can gather more strength to go further on. And you know, life is full of interest, it never ceases to interest, no matter what aspect it is that you have in mind, there's always something fresh and new, there's always strange things that can happen.
Oh, that's the beauty of it.
It's a great adventure, and I think that's the whole secret, is to look upon life from every aspect, from whatever sphere you may be on, whether it's on earth or over here, whatever degree you may be in, is to appreciate it and to make your effort a little more each day to gain more knowledge and experience, and to make that possible by thinking not only for self but for others.
Yes.
You know, you learn more through others and by helping others than ever you do by sitting twiddling your thumbs.
Yes, that's quite right. Quite right, David. What a lovely speech.
Quite a bit, I can assure you. But I do not put it so well, perhaps.
Oh, yes.
I feel very strongly, nevertheless.
You put it very well. I'm very, very pleased.
I always look forward to your meetings, you know that.
Yes.
Because I know that with you I can be myself, I can talk naturally, and I can open up.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, be quite honest about this, I get tremendous kick out come to talk to you. And also I feel all the time that, in some strange kind of way, that I'm learning too.
You're learning. Well, I'm very, very glad that you found your way here.
But you know we need to worry.
No.
I know you've been told this many a time, and you ask a second time of it, but although your life is not always easy and the pattern doesn't fall in back to the way you like it, at the same time I know that you have no cause to be unduly concerned about the future.
That's all right, David. I have to go.
From those who don't know that when you come here, there'll be such a reception for you. You shall be there.
Ah, I shall be very glad.
Anyway, I must go now because the fire's weakening. But it's been nice to speak to you, and I know that everyone here, and that includes all the dear ones that you associate with your personal life, they all send their love and their blessing to you.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you'll have your boyfriend back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, David.
Goodbye.
Thank you.